you can keep me, I wanna stay here with you forever. I've got my
Nina Simone singing Gershwin's I Loves You, Porgy. And that is it from me for today. I do hope you'll join me next Sunday from 10 o'clock.
Sunday Morning with Susie Klein is a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones.
It's that whole atmosphere that's created by live music, which I think is wonderful.
When it works, when it's a great performance, you certainly do feel a shared experience.
A live performance is totally, totally different.
A front row seat at a live concert every weekday night. Radio 3, live in concert.
To hear people coughing in the auditorium, to hear people applauding, enjoying the same piece together.
I do enjoy it through the radio.
Live concerts from across the UK. With, on Thursday, Mozart and Mahler from the Liverpool Philharmonic Hall. Radio 3, live in concert, weeknights from 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And now, Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Cathy Marston first came to notice when, as a student at the Royal Ballet Upper School, she won the Ursula Morton Choreographic Award. Since then, she has choreographed for and danced with most of the leading dance companies, and she's currently director of the Berne Ballet. I think that your work, Cathy, as a choreographer, often divides into sort of two strands, storytelling side, and something that you have referred to as dance poems. Is that fair?
That would be fair. I find it almost impossible to be completely abstract. And I really like having another reference to bounce back to. So often works of literature, sometimes works of visual artists, or a piece of music, or a biography even. And sometimes these reference points become narratives, and at other times they just become starting points for images that are strung together or layered together in a what I describe as a poetic form rather than a narrative form.
Tell us a little bit about the Berne Ballet, which is currently visiting this country.
I've been directing the Berne Ballet for 4 years now. I was invited shortly after I finished my tenure as Associate Artist of the Royal Opera House, and I really started from scratch. I fired all the dancers that were there and formed my own group. We're 12 dancers with a couple of apprentices. I call it a contemporary ballet company. All of the dancers have classical training, but they're all extremely creative, and almost all of our repertoire is created especially for the company.
The first music you're going to hear, you decided to choose, well, it could have been one of two pieces in particular, but you went for the one which you think is perhaps less well known.
I've always loved Shostakovich, and particularly his range of music, from the string quartets to the film music, the jazz pieces and so on. But the two piano concertos are among my favourite works of his, particularly the slow movements. I've chosen number one because I think it's slightly less known, certainly within the dance world, than number two. Number two is used by Macmillan in concerto, in his ballet concerto. And also Didi Veldman choreographed a ballet Momo for us in Bern this year, and she used the adage in her ballet, which was very stunning. She had the piano on a rolling device that crossed the stage very slowly as a big pendulum swung. It was beautiful. Anyway, the one that I'm going to play today has some just stunning moments with the trumpet pealing out of nowhere, and it just gives me goosebumps.
not difficult to see why that would be attractive to a choreographic mind.
I can't imagine what it is to listen to it without feeling it in your body. I feel the music as a sensation on my skin, and then it goes into my stomach and then into my feet. It's amazing.
We heard the slow movement of the Piano Concerto No. 1 in C major, Opus 35, by Shostakovich. Yerzhy Maksymiuk conducted the English Chamber Orchestra. Dmitri Alexeyev played the piano, and the solo trumpet was played by Philip Jones. Now, there's a link, Cathy Marston, rather tenuous one now, between Shostakovich and our next composer, because he is called Prokofiev, but he's a relation of the great man rather than himself.
His grandson, Gabriel Prokofiev. The very strong link for me would be that, with Gabriel's music, as soon as I heard it, I felt it in my body. And that's key for me. And with Gabriel and I are currently working together on a new ballet. It's going to be called Ein Winternachtstraum, a little bit of a play on A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's an unlikely pairing, but I was trying to find a solution to how to make a full evening ballet from Midsummer Night's Dream with the Mendelssohn music, but you have to add something to the Mendelssohn music because it's written as entr'acte. And I'd come across Gabriel's Concerto for Turntables and Orchestra and desperately wanted to choreograph it. I found it at the same time very cool in terms of it's got that kind of, the clubby thing, I guess, to moments of it, but also very humorous. And one evening I thought, just put it on an iPod shuffle with a Mendelssohn and see what happens, just for fun. And it works incredibly well. My concept for the Midsummer Night's Dream, or Ein Winternachtstraum, as it's going to be called in Bern, is that the dream doesn't take place in a forest, but it takes place in an abandoned, rusted-up fairground. A bit of a metaphor for the love of Titania and Oberon, their love's gone rusty. And I love the fact that I visualise, we haven't designed it yet, but I visualise these sort of circular set with the merry-go-rounds or the helter-skelters or the big wheel or whatever. And at the same time, you've got the music playing as Puck does with the cycle of things, that Puck moves things back and forwards, and you have the orchestra playing with this turntablist, basically being a naughty little elf like Puck. So we're having a lot of fun at the moment. I yesterday received a warped wedding march, which is going to be very much a lot of fun to choreograph.
And also, I imagine if you're Prokofiev's grandson, you really do need to go in a sort of different direction, don't you?
Because it must
the weight
be,
of expectation.
Yeah, yes, I mean, it must be sort of a wonderful and terrible pressure all at once.
love music has also got a sense of humour to it.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm not known for my sort of humour in my choreography, but I do want to push that a little bit. I feel it's time. I've gotten over my depressive years, I think.
Well, actually, that's very good news, because we do find when people listen to their list of music for Private Passions that at the end they always turn to me and say, God, I didn't think I was as melancholy as that. But I think it's because we do tend to relate to music that moves us profoundly on the whole,
yes,
don't we?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was the Allegro Gavotte Snowtime from Concerto for Turntables and Orchestra by Gabriel Prokofiev. I don't think that the modern textbooks on orchestration and notation probably tell one how to write for turntables.
Well, you should try booking a turntablist to do it. I'm learning a lot at the moment, trying to find someone that can read the orchestral score and do all of the scratching and other things that they're required to do in the piece.
Well, maybe you'll have to go back to that particular turntablist, who was DJ Yoda, and he was playing with the Heritage Orchestra, conducted by Jules Buckley. Cathy Marston, Nina Simone next, one of the most sultry and sexy singers I can think of.
Oh, she's stunning. I saw her when I was at the Royal Ballet School when I was 18, playing in Camden. And she's a bit of a leitmotif for me in my life. She always comes back. And I looked at the list of music actually this morning that I'd brought to you and realised that none of the music is what I would describe as frowning music. It either makes me smile or it makes my forehead smooth. and this one really makes my forehead smooth. It feels like a cold compress or a nice cool breeze on a beach or something, but it makes me feel really good.
Satisfy this hungriness. Let the wind blow through your heart, for wild is a to me.
itself. Like a leaf clings to a tree, to me.
It works its way to quite a climax, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's wonderful, the contrast between the piano part and her voice as well. I mean, it's just brilliant.
Well, I was going to say to you, Cathy Marston, that I imagine as a dancer you'd appreciate this particularly, that by playing the piano herself, as well as singing, Nina Simone is able to actually stretch the kind of lazy aspect of the music.
Yeah, people always ask dancers how they remember all the things and coordinate the different body parts. I can't imagine how she's coordinating these two parts, because you feel at moments that amazingly stretched out laziness, like you say, in the voice, and the piano's throbbing underneath. That counterpoint that she finds within herself is astonishing.
Wild is the Wind, Nina Simone, and the music by Dmitri Tiomkin, of course, the famous film composer, the song by Tiomkin and Ned Washington. You mentioned earlier, Cathy, and I'm interested to talk about this a little bit more, how your dancers at Berne are all classically trained, although they're doing what one would loosely call contemporary dance. Mm. Do you think that's quite important from the way you work, that they do have a classical training?
It's important that they have both, really. I use a lot of line and flexibility, and I like to use all of the levels. So not only floor work and not only elevated work, but really the whole range. And the same it goes for the partnering, that I like when a pas de deux can involve some lifts or some manoeuvres that are really come about through strength from either the man or the woman, and some partnering manoeuvres that come about through counterwork, counterbalance, taking one another's weight, momentum. And so it's important that they're really all-rounded as dancers. But I do enjoy the facility of classical dancers. And I still, if I get blocked for some reason, I'll still go back to classical steps and say, OK, we need something that's jumping, pas de chat, or whatever, jeté, something like that. How can I invert it? How can I twist it? But I'll use that as a little provocation if necessary.
That's a very good introduction, in a way, to our next piece, because Charles Ives, in The Unanswered Question, took blocks of sound, didn't he, and sort of contrasted them against each other.
Actually, the way that I understand he's made this work is very similar to ways that I experiment with choreography myself. As I understand it, he's made these three layers of music, and they are not, strictly speaking, coordinated. So presumably in every live performance there would be some variation in where the different accents fall.
It's a sort of philosophical exercise in music, isn't it?
It is.
A search for the question, and the flute's gradually getting more and more desperate to find it.
I think it's a reflection of the three voices in my head. The question, the search, and the very agitated search sometimes, and then the relief of the... He describes it as the silences, doesn't he, I think, Charles Ives, the strings.
The Orpheus Chamber Orchestra played Charles Ives' The Unanswered Question. I think, Cathy, you have quite a fascination for those people that constituted the group of Schumann, Brahms, Clara.
Yes. I read a book called Clara by a Scottish writer, Janice Galloway, some years ago. And it's a biography, but it's written more as a novel, I suppose. And it really inspired me, so much so that I spent 3 weeks in a Scottish artist retreat making a treatment for a ballet. And then wanted so much to do it that I didn't find the right opportunity for some years. And then finally I became director of the Bern Ballet, so I can choose what I want to do and usually when I want to do it. But still, the ballet that I had in my head wasn't right for that particular moment. It had transformed to more of a chamber piece. Originally, I wanted to include some of the orchestral music, particularly a piece of Brahms that we'll play in a moment. But now the piece has become a 50-minute work of purely of piano pieces and songs, the leader. And this is really my favourite, one of Schumann's. The words describe an old knight sitting on a castle or in a castle on high, and I think it describes him turning to stone, and he watches the sort of the peace of the world around him and watches a wedding party pass down below, and the final sentence is, but the bride is weeping. To me, it describes so well the moment where Schumann is becoming old, Robert Schumann is becoming old. Well, not so old, but he feels that his end is coming near, I suppose. He tried to kill himself and he gets put in a mental asylum. And he sees Clara, the love of his life, and he sees the young Brahms, who perhaps in a way is a reflection to him of himself as a younger man. And it captures for me the memories that he must have been having or the sentiment that he must have been having. That's purely my fantasy. I've read many biographies on the subject and I, to be honest, lose the sense of what actually happened, what people think happened and what's just in my imagination. But for the purposes of creativity, I don't think it really matters.
Regen schauer
Another brilliant play on the voice and piano, isn't it?
Devastating. That last line, too, particularly has... You know, you talked about the friction between the playing of the piano in Nina Simone and the voice, and there we had that last paragraph, a wedding party sails down there on the Rhine in the sunshine, musicians play merrily, and the lovely bride, she weeps. It's that contrast which is so marvellous, isn't it? Yeah. Setting up something happy. And Fischer Dieskau sings that so marvellously.
Oh, he's got the absolute subtlety of it, hasn't he?
Dietrich Fischer Dieskau singing there with Gerald Moore. And that was Auf einer Burg from Liederkreis, Opus 39 by Schumann. And that takes us neatly on to Cathy.
Well, it's taking us on to Brahms. I was talking about the ballet that I wanted to make probably about 5 or 6 years ago now. The ballet that I've actually made is called Clara, and the Bern Ballet will be performing it at the Limbury Theatre in the Royal Opera House on the 25th to the 28th of May. But the original one, I wanted to close it with a very different scale of music, the Brahms Piano Concerto. As I understand, I mean, nothing of this is really concrete in terms of evidence, but Schumann died and Brahms, the young Johannes Brahms, was living with Clara Schumann at the time. And there's been a lot of discussion about what exactly their relationship was. Was it purely platonic? Were they in love? No one can really say. But as far as I understand, during the time that he lived with Clara Schumann and helped her look after the large family that she had, he tried to write this piece and had writer's block. And he wasn't able to bring this piano concerto to fruition until he finally left Clara. And in one of the letters that I read from him that he wrote to one of his friends, he said he had to choose between music or life and chose music and left Clara after Robert had died, and moved to Berlin, and finally was able to produce this piano concerto. And I think the second movement, the adage that we're going to play, is supposedly a tender, loving portrait of Clara. We can't play the whole thing because it's about 14 minutes long, so this is really a teaser, and you have to listen to the whole thing because, well, it's just wonderful.
Thank you.
It's a cruel cut, I'm sorry.
It really is, yeah. It goes so to the beautiful. Best bit just then, but as I said, it's a teaser.
We heard music from the second movement, the Adagio. I'm interested, dancers always say Adage, because I suppose that's so much part of the...
Have I been saying the word Adage? Yes, probably.
No, I've noticed it quite often, lots of dancers do. From the Piano Concerto No. 1 in D minor, Opus 15 by Brahms. Hélène Grimaud was the soloist, with the Berlin Staatskapelle Orchestra, conducted by Kurt Sanderling. Now, you often create dance, Cathy Marston, to specially written scores, and you've done a lot with our next composer.
Yes, I have. I've been very lucky. Since I was at the Royal Ballet School, I was encouraged to work with composers as well as existing scores, and I've used every opportunity that I could. I first came across Dave Marek's music through a musician that I was working with, and I heard his piece Broken Fiction, and I choreographed it, and he came to the premiere and we got talking, and then I invited him to make a work based on Ibsen's Ghosts, which was commissioned by the Royal Opera House. And following that, we've had a string of works together for the Royal Opera House, for my company, the Cathy Marston Project, for the Bern Ballet. And most recently, we made Blood Wedding for the Finnish National Ballet together, which I think was probably, I think it's one of our best works. This piece, actually, Dave wrote before we met. It's written for the Katja Lebeck Band, which was made up of, Katja Lebeck, Dave, and a percussionist. It's on an album called Unspoken, and it's often an album that I use when I'm researching movement, when I just want movement to be drawn out of me somehow. It's a short piece, but somehow it's very inspiring. Another dialogue between the voice and piano, isn't it?
Yes. Unspoken by Dave Marek, the Katja Lebeck Band. Finally, a piece that I think, as it were, you almost took with you to Switzerland. You certainly took the artist, didn't you?
Yes, I did. This is a totally different piece. We've been very much piano-driven today, which wasn't intentional. But my other passion, and it is a private one, I suppose, is the guitar and songs for the guitar. And I live in a beautiful house in Bern. I've been very lucky to find a 300-year-old house, and I live in the attic, and it's got an enormous garden with little pools and fountains and huge trees. And I live with musicians who are my neighbours, and we have a fire and we sing together. Well, they sing and I listen. But happily, my best friend, Jenny Tattersall, is my assistant in Bern. She came with me from London, and she came with her now husband, Gus McGregor. And I'll always feel indebted for Gus for making that leap of faith, because he gave up his work and so on in England and moved with Jenny. But luckily, he's had enormous success in Switzerland. He's a singer-songwriter, and he met people in Bern who've produced an album. He's now producing his second album. The first one's called Lifeline, and I wanted to play the title track, Lifeline. It's happy, which is really nice. It's a good point to finish with. It's the sort of music that takes me into the countryside in the summer and feel the wind through my hair, I guess.
Well, thank you very much, Cathy Marston, for introducing us to your music. And as we play out on this, we will imagine you going through the countryside, your hair flying.
Thank you.
Headed for the nearest dive, and ran through all the questions that were playing on our minds. And I could see you laughing as you took a whiskey hit, saying life is no rehearsal. Honey, this is it. And I swear I heard the angels calling, and heaven sent a lifeline down, same will wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground. I could have looked to you forever with that mischief in your eye. I could have made the gods forgive me for being a fool with you that night. And if you gave me half a chance to, I would take you in the waves. I'd promise love just like the sunrise promises the day. And I swear I heard the angels calling, and heaven sent a lifeline down, saying we'll wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground. Chance to, I would take you in the waves. I'd promise love just like the sunrise promises the day. And I swear I heard the angels calling, and heaven sent a lifeline, same will wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground. And I swear I heard the angels calling, and heaven sent a lifeline down, saying we'll wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground.
Gus McGregor with Lifeline. Cathy Marston was talking to Michael Barclay. And the Berne Ballet is visiting the Limbury Studio at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden next week from the 25th to the 28th of May. Next Sunday, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the actor Max Beasley. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Chris Marshall.
A festival of light music.
Light Fantastic is coming to BBC Radio 3. Over the weekend, starting Friday the 24th of June, we'll be celebrating the best of British light music. From Friday afternoon music while you work to a Sunday tea time performance by John Wilson and his orchestra. And there's a chance for amateur musicians to get involved right now. Go online to the Radio 3 homepage, download the sheet music to this, one of the most famous pieces of light music ever, and take part in our online orchestra. Get involved as we celebrate the UK's musical heritage. Light Fantastic, coming soon to BBC Radio 3.
Well, don't worry, you really are tuned to BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's a couple of minutes after 1 o'clock, time for the news with David Cornett.
The Sunday Herald newspaper in Scotland has named a footballer who it says is at the centre of controversy on the Twitter website over the use of privacy injunctions. The player has been identified in a number of foreign newspapers, but the Herald is the first mainstream British paper to print his name. The Herald says it's unsustainable for newspapers to be prevented from sharing information which is easily available on the internet. President Obama has said that he would approve another operation in Pakistan if he knew that a leading militant from Al-Qaeda or the Taliban was in the country. Mr. Obama said the raid in which Osama bin Laden was killed had been necessary to secure the United States. A spokesman for the Pakistani president said that the international community should work together to counter terrorism rather than taking unilateral action. At least 16 people have died in a series of explosions in Iraq. More than a dozen bombs went off in and around Baghdad. Most of the victims were police officers and soldiers. The attacks have come on the day that the British military has finally ended its mission in Iraq with the withdrawal of Royal Navy personnel who've been training Iraqi security forces. The Transport Secretary, Philip Hammond, says the latest volcanic eruption in Iceland is unlikely to affect flights over the United Kingdom. Iceland's main airport was closed and domestic flights were cancelled when ash began spewing from the Grímsvötn volcano. Last year, ash from another Icelandic volcano drifted south, forcing the closure of European airspace for several days. A post-mortem examination is to be carried out on a pilot whale which died in a loch in the Hebrides. It was with a pod of around 60 whales that appeared in Loch Carnan in South Uist on Thursday. Marine rescuers are trying to find the rest of the group because of fears that they may become beached. And the weather, it'll be mostly bright, with the odd shower and strong gusty winds reaching gale force in places. Most areas will become dry this evening, but some showers will remain in the northwest, turning heavier overnight. BBC News and weather at 4 minutes past one.
With David Cornett, I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time at 2 o'clock, we'll be hearing a piano recital given last week at the Royal Festival Hall in London by Lang Lang. He'll be starting with Bach's Partita No. 1 in B-flat, then he'll play Schubert's Piano Sonata in B-flat, Deutsch 960, and he'll end with Chopin's 12 studies from the Opus 25 set. That's our Sunday concert, which starts at 2 o'clock. But now, the early music show, and Catherine Bott's thoughts take her far back through the mists of time.
A plangent call from the Dark Ages. Today, merely introducing an edition of the Early Music Show. But in the 9th century, it was the sound of those marauding, plundering Vikings. But a spot of lateral rethinking leads to the commonsensical fact that the medieval Norsemen, presented to us as charging around laying waste to civilised Europe for fun and booty, were actually perfectly respectable tradesmen underneath their horned helmets. They didn't just loot, they bought and sold. OK, the ultimate aim was Scandinavian expansion, but the byproduct was a network of trading posts along the coastlines of the North and Baltic Seas. These trading posts gradually expanded into a network of mercantile towns spreading inland from the coast, and by the 13th century, a town would have its own Hansa, or guild, to protect the interests of the emerging mercantile class, who lived not by the knightly code of chivalry, but by the rules of the bourgeoisie. From that word, Hansa, comes the Hanseatic League, an economic alliance of the trading cities that flourished in northern Europe for several hundred years. Former Hanseatic towns are still recognisable today, with their grand town halls in front of huge marketplaces, their opulently gabled houses built for rich men, and their high church towers. The Viking horn was heard no more, replaced by the calls of the town waits, with sackbut and cornet players sounding signals from those high towers. And these were the musicians who would be central to the town's general musical entertainment.